Good morning. I'm Jennifer Napier-Pierce, and this is City Views. Writing, it's a creative process, a craft dominated by words and punctuation and themes and characters. Writers are motivated by storytelling, saying something profound and illuminating the human condition, right? Well, the writer Steve Almond argues writers write to purge their own souls, to explore personal weakness, and to find truth about themselves. In short, writing, he says, is therapy. Today on the program, we're talking about why we write and the ins and outs of the writing process. Joining us this hour is Steve Almond. He's the author of 10 books, including Candy Freak and God Bless America. His article, Why Therapy is on the Wane and Writing Workshops are on the Rise, it was published in the March 23rd edition of the New York Times Magazine. And Steve Almond is joining us from the studios of WGBH in Boston. And Steve, thanks so much for your time.
Good to be here.
Also with us, David Tippetts. He is a memoir and fiction writer, and he chairs the Writers Critique Group at the Salt Lake City Library. He's a board member of Writers at Work. David is joining me in studio. David, welcome.
Thank you.
Steve Almond and others will present writing workshops at the Writers at Work Conference, which will be held at the Alta Lodge from June 6th through June 10th. And there's more information on our website. We'll give you more on that as we go. Later on in the program, the final resting place for prophets, politicians, and pioneers, we give you a guide to the Salt Lake City Cemetery. But first, writing. Are you blogging or working on the great American novel? What keeps you motivated as a writer? And what do you know about becoming a better writer? You can give us a call if you like. 801-355-TALK is our number, 801-355-8255. Or you can send email to cityviews@kcpw.org. Steve Almond, your thesis in this piece, this New York Times piece, is that, you know, people are turning to writing workshops not to tell some kind of truth about the human condition, but more as some sort of self-medication. And you use your own experience as supporting evidence. Briefly, tell us why you decided to become a writer.
Well, I was a journalist for, you know, 6 or 7 years, and I enjoyed doing it, although I don't think I was very good at it. But I just got bored of the sorts of questions that were being asked, which were, you know, sort of who did what wrong and here's the proof. They were external questions. They didn't have to do with what was going on inside of the people that I was writing about. Those questions, why do we push away success? Why do we, you know, blow it up when we start to enjoy some prosperity? Why do people disappoint us? Why do we disappoint ourselves? Why can't we hold on to love? All those big questions with the big question marks at the end are literary questions. The piece I wrote for The Times was not arguing that writing is therapy. It was arguing that writing is therapeutic because it is our effort to answer some of those questions and tell the story that, or the stories, I should say, that live inside of us, as opposed to, you know, journalism, for instance, which, even though it can be wonderful, it's generally dedicated straight journalism, not long-form narrative journalism, but straight journalism of the sort I was doing was really fact-gathering. Hmm.
You see a real connection between the rise of writing workshops and the wane of talk therapy. When did you see this connection? And, you know, why do you think these two are linked in some way?
Well, the reason I see them as linked is probably because of my own mishigas. I mean, I'm the kid of two therapists who essentially, you know, and I've done my share of therapy. But I started thinking about that process and thinking, well, what is a good therapist doing? They're listening to stories and they're trying to figure out what's going on inside of people, things they can't even see or understand through the stories that they're telling, some of which might be random or avoidant, but ultimately the goal in a therapeutic setting is to get to the bottom of it, whatever the primal scene is, or the moments or the dynamics that are still haunting that person and keeping them from moving forward and having a greater sense of self-understanding and not beating themselves up. Mm. And I see writing as asking that same set of questions. And as I travel around teaching at places like Writers at Work or teaching students here at Grub Street in Boston, I was kind of thinking about, so what do these people really want? Well, maybe some of them want to be famous or they want to have a narcissistic reward and get their name out there. But I think at the bottom of it, Jennifer, what they want is to find a truer, braver version of themselves, to start to get real about what's going on inside them and the, you know, the relationships in their lives. And I don't see that as a I'm not saying that, you know, so our job in the writing workshop is to pat them on the back and make them feel better. That's not it at all. Our job is actually to make them feel brave enough to get into the darkest stuff and to not turn away and run away when the feelings become overwhelming. Because that's what makes great literature, is when characters are overrun by the emotions that we all recognize. And in other parts of our lives, we're constantly being marketed to and sort of being told you can cure your problems with the right product. But I think deep down, we know that's nonsense, that the only way you really make any sort of progress is by facing your demons. And that the best way that we can do that is by making art, whether it's visual art or musical art or, in my case, literary art.
Hmm. We're speaking with the author Steve Almond, also with us David Tippetts with Writers at Work. David, does this argument that Almond is making resonate with you? Is this something that you have seen in the workshops that you've conducted, people looking for that therapeutic salve that writing can provide?
Yes, of course. It's mixed, but you see that over and over again. In the little workshop that I do here at the library, we have people who come and go on a constant basis. They'll come to the workshop every for a few weeks or a few months, and then they go, and they've found something that they wanted. They've discovered something they wanted or not, and we see people come to the writer's workshop, and it's obvious they're working out their problems. And sometimes it gets in the way of the writing because it's too emotional, and they're too close to it, and they can't be objective. And the writers who really want to get to that point of objectivity where they can stand back and look at themselves are the ones that will make it as writers. Whether they ever make the kind of success that Steve Almond has is another question. But for most people, I don't think that's the goal. Or it shouldn't be. They want one thing, is that they want the status. They want to be able to tell their friends that they've published writing. And the first product, the first publication I had was in Montana Magazine. And it was a piece about something that happened in my youth when I was 20 years old up in Montana. And I was so proud of it. And we happened to be driving through Montana when it came out, and it was on the cover, on the front of every convenience store we went in. It was right in the front, and I picked it up. I was so proud of it, and I handed it across the desk. I was going to buy another copy, and I told the clerk, I published this, and I was so proud of it, and she looked up at me and she said, "That'll be $6.95, sir."
There it is. That's fame in the literary world.
There it is. David Tippetts. He's with Writers at Work. Also, the author, Steve Almond, is with us, author of Candy Freak, God Bless America, and many other books. His piece in the New York Times, Why Therapy is on the Wane and Writing Workshops are on the Rise. He'll be speaking at the 27th annual Writers at Work conference happening June 6th through 10th at the Alta Lodge here in Alta, Utah. Give us a call if you'd like to join us with your writing stories. What motivates you as a writer? 801-355-TALK is our number, 801-355-8255. Steve Almond, the author George Orwell, penned a very prominent essay entitled Why I Write. And the first among the reasons why he says people write is what David Tippetts was describing, sheer egoism. Did you have that thrill, that adrenaline rush when you saw your name in print for the first time?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's probably the reason I got into journalism, because that's the quickest way to get your work in front of the world. And I think that every writer, you know, internally there's a struggle. I mean, every person, there's a struggle within everybody for recognition and acclaim and narcissistic reward. And then at a deeper level, for a feeling that somebody really understands you, and that you're able to allow some of the, at least in literary art, allow some of the ugly, shameful, unbearable stuff onto the page. I think I know the piece that David is talking about. Do I, Dave? Have I seen that piece?
Yeah, you have.
Okay, so what was beautiful about that piece of writing, and I was lucky enough to, I think, see it in an early draft, was here was this guy, I didn't know him from Adam, writing this absolutely heartrending, beautiful recollection of a memory that had haunted him for decades. and getting to the truth of that moment in his life where everything changed. And that's the kind of, I agree with Orwell. I'm not going to be dumb enough to disagree with him. We're all driven by narcissism and egotism and wanting to kind of have the status and get our names out there. But I think underneath that, we're driven by something deeper than that, which is the desire to be known. That's why these communities of writers are so powerful to people. You know, it's not going to happen on the internet just by updating your Facebook page. That might be the narcissistic impulse, but it isn't going to give you the real sense of reward, which is somebody, you know, you unburdening yourself and sharing a part of yourself that you had kept hidden, and somebody, turning around and screaming in horror, but in fact saying, yep, I understand that. I've been there too. Thank you for being brave enough to put it out there.
Hmm. Steve Almond is the author of Candy Freak, God Bless America, and many other books, and he's presenting at this year's Writers at Work Conference, June 6th through June 10th here in Alta, Utah. David Tippetts is a board member of Writers at Work, and we're talking about the art and the craft of writing and what motivates people to put pen to paper. 801-355-TALK is our number, 801-355-8255. Let's go to the phones, and Chris is joining us from Salt Lake City. Chris, hi.
Hi there, how you doing?
Good, thanks.
Hey, it's really interesting to hear everything that the guests are saying. I direct the Writing Center at Westminster College, and I'm just curious how they see what they're talking about, the sort of therapeutic benefits, the self-expressive benefit of writing, relating to all the other kinds of writing that we do. Because certainly creative writing is important, but not all of us are novelists, not all of us are poets. What about all that other kind of writing we do on a day-to-day basis?
Interesting question. Chris, you know, we blog, we write in our journals. Are you limiting your argument, Steve Almond, to the creative writing? And how does non-creative writing fit into this?
Well, I don't know if there is anything known as non-creative writing. In other words, anybody who's trying to work with the language, they might have a different intention. People whose job it is or who support themselves by writing, I don't know, pamphlets for, you know, a travel agency. I guess those don't exist anymore, but indulge me. They have a particular, or here's an even funnier example. I had a friend whose job it was to provide the plot summaries for pornographic films. Now, I am not going to argue to you, Jennifer. Yeah, I know. I thought it would be a dream job, but he actually described it as a nightmare, as you can imagine. I'm not going to argue that this guy was sitting there saying, now let me get into the heart of each of these characters, divine their motivations, their darkest secrets, and include that in this 150-word summation of, you know, whatever, Romancing the Bone or whatever it is. He was doing something more practical with the language, but the fact of the matter is that good writing is writing that's lucid, that's clear, in which the reader understands, what they're reading. The syntax is all in place, and these are things that are common to any form of writing that you undertake. So creative writing is trying to answer those internal questions, but I do all kinds of writing. I write about politics. I write editorials of various sorts. I write profiles of musicians. When I was a journalist, I was doing the same basic work, which was organizing the language so as to convey characters and scenes and get across basic facts to people.
But I think what Chris is getting to, I mean, is that therapeutic? Is any writing therapeutic?
Well, for me, it's not as deeply therapeutic. What I get from those assignments is a little sense of accomplishment and maybe a paycheck that allows me to spend some time supporting my bad habit, which is writing, about the sort of inner turmoil of what I experience inside myself and my characters. So there is a difference, and I'm not trying to level it out and say it's all the same stuff. Obviously, if you have a commercial intent with your writing, you're trying to get somebody to be drawn to a particular product or service or whatever it is. But what I am suggesting is, studying writing, there is a reward anytime you successfully complete a piece of writing and deploy the language in the way that you want to meet your suited end, your stated end. That, to me, feels gratifying. Therapeutic may be overstating it, but gratifying, certainly.
David Tippetts?
Yes.
Things to add to those comments?
Yeah, it's I think creative writing puts you in a different state of mind. At least that's my experience. And it's hard to stay there. And it's hard to get there, when I'm in the state that I aspire to, I start to dream in text, and I'm dreaming, and I can almost see the language, and it's a very different place. So
that's right. That's right. My friend who was writing the porn synopsis is, I don't think he was dreaming in text.
No.
Might have been doing something in text, but it wasn't dreaming.
We're speaking with Steve Almond. He's the author of many books, including Candy Freak, God Bless America. His article, Why Therapy is on the Wane and Writing Workshops are on the Rise, was recently published in the New York Times Magazine. And he's one of the presenters at this year's 27th Annual Writers at Work Conference, happening June 6th through the 10th at the Alta Lodge here in Alta, Utah. There's more information on the website writersatwork.org. We will have links to both Steve Almond's article in the Times as well as to the conference on our website, kcpw.org. We need to take a break, but if you've got questions about becoming a better writer or comments on why you write, give us a call. 801-355-TALK is our number. This is City Views on KCPW, Salt Lake City. Welcome back. This is City Views. I'm Jennifer Napier-Pierce. Today on the program, we're talking about writing and the motivation behind composing books or penning screenplays or even scribbling in a journal. The author, Steve Almond, argues we write because it's therapeutic, it makes us feel better, and we'll have links to his New York Times piece, Why Talk Therapy is on the Wane and Writing Workshops are on the Rise, on our website, kcpw.org. He is presenting at the annual Writers at Work Conference being held June 6th through June 10th at the Alta Lodge. We'll give you more detail on that as we go. Also in studio with us, David Tippetts. He's a board member of Writers at Work. And you can join our conversation if you like. If you blog or you're working on a novel, why do you write? Do you think it's purely instinctive to tell stories, or do you think writing is a way to purge your soul? Give us a call. 801-355-TALK is our number. 801-355-8255. Steve Almond, is this a lot of navel-gazing, or is there some practical reason, practical purpose to asking ourselves the question why we write?
Well, certainly it's navel-gazing. That's our, we live in that age. But, I also feel like it's no coincidence that people are turning to the ancient pleasures of storytelling now in greater numbers than ever. And I see that because, when I applied to get a Master's of Fine Arts, which is sort of writing school, and it was almost 20 years ago, there are about 30 programs, maybe 35 programs in the whole country. Now there are over 1,000 programs, undergraduate and graduate, that award a creative writing degree. So empirically, it has become much more common for people, civilians, to say to themselves, for whatever set of complicated reasons, I want to work with the language to tell stories. And I think the reason is because the world we live in has become frantic, morally chaotic. We're constantly sort of inundated with information and immerse ourselves in surfing around the internet or whatever screens we're looking at, or iPhones. And those things are a kind of frantic pursuit of emotional connection, right? We all want to be on the network. We all want to be experiencing the same story, whether it's OJ or Monica Lewinsky. But I don't think those sorts of stories, although they do kind of provoke our internal lives, are really the same as telling our own story and trying to understand why particular moments in our lives infect us, obsess us. And so I guess you could say it's navel-gazing, but to make art requires self-examination, not self-indulgence, but really rigorous self-examination. That's what David was talking about when he talked about getting perspective or being objective. I'm not arguing that writing should make people feel better and they should just do a journal entry and suddenly they're a writer. In fact, my experience, Jennifer, is that writing about painful experiences, and I think David will back this up, is actually a very difficult thing to do. It's actually very destabilizing to experience things, as they come up either in your memory or in the life of your characters, that are usually triggered by very painful memories that you have and dynamics. And I remember talking with a young woman. She'd written an essay about kind of her hair and how difficult it was to style her hair and how her parents were obsessed with it. And I said to her as I was reading, she meant it to be funny, and I said to her as she was, you know, reading over a passage that had to do with how it took 6 hours for her to comb out her hair and had to use all these chemicals to get it straight. And I looked at her and I said, gee, it sounds like there was a lot of pressure on you to be perfect when you were a kid. And she burst into tears. I don't think she was, you know, writing to make things easier. I think she was trying to tell strangers, tell me, tell the world, there was a lot of pressure on me as a kid. And it, you know, she was telling that story through the story of her hair. But, you know, I can hear my peers cringing. Is Almond saying that writing is palliative and it should make us all feel better and, you know, that we should just, publish our journals and call ourselves writers? It's not what I'm saying at all. But I am saying that human beings find meaning in storytelling, and the particular stories we tell are universal. You know, when we read about Achilles and Hector, we're reading about courage and cowardice, and those resonate within us because we're all human beings. We're all carrying around the same sacred fears and desires.
Mm. You mentioned the internet, and I'm interested in your thoughts on how you think the internet has changed the writer's craft, or has it?
Well, I think it's just a machine that has allowed us to distract ourselves and to move from the world, the actual physical world through which we used to move and, you know, observe what was around us, to a kind of suddenly the world is, or a million different worlds are on a little screen, and we can scroll around and surf from one place to another, from one narrative to another. So I think it's essentially enabled us to become distracted from what's really happening inside us. But the reason, therefore, Jennifer, that I think people are going back to writing workshops is because what they really want is what I talked about before and what David was talking about. They want to be known. They want to make the insides of themselves, even and especially the unbearable, ugly parts of themselves, known to the world, the parts of themselves that feel freakish or monstrous. And that really doesn't happen on the internet. If you've spent any time on the internet, you know that the meanest place on earth is the comment section of any particular artist. And whenever anybody lays themselves bare and really tells the truth, boy, they really let themselves in for abuse.
Do you read the comments, Steve Almond?
Of course, everyone does, Jennifer. Everyone reads the comments. That's what they do. But a writing workshop, I think, in the best instance, certainly the sort that are writers at work, is just the opposite kind of experience. You come into the room and everybody says, okay, our job is to help everybody in here be more truthful and more eloquent about the truth.
Mm. David Tippetts.
Yeah, it really is. But there's another thing about, especially my experience in writing. I was raised in a 19th century household where we lived a very different lifestyle than is common today. And my concern is to preserve the stories and the circumstances of my upbringing. I didn't come to writing until I was 60 years old, and I was retired, and this became my retirement. And so it's been a wonderful experience. But when I look at my motivation, I have a daughter who is in her 20s, and she asked me, why don't you write about us? Mm. And I said, well, you know, everybody has something in their past that bothers them, that intrigues them, that they're trying to work out. And it's those stories of my upbringing, the years on this farm in Montana, that is really my emotional center and where I want to preserve those stories.
Mm. The author, Terry Tempest Williams, she was asked, you know, why do I write? And her response was, it was quite wide-ranging, I have to say. She said, I write to make peace with things I cannot control. I write to create fabric in a world that often appears black and white. I write to discover. I thought some of those were just really beautiful sentiments, trying to explain the many reasons people come to language and use that as a refuge. Steve Almond?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, you know, I wouldn't choose, and there's also, I sort of oftentimes run up against the argument of like, well, do you have to be damaged to write, you know, do you have to be in inner turmoil to write? And I said, well, no, of course not. In fact, when you're depressed or, you know, if you're feeling too disoriented to put a sentence together, you're not going to do effective writing. There's this myth of the suffering artist, you know, the romantic myth of Byron and Shelley and, you know, Van Gogh and so forth. I say, look, I would not want to be Vincent Van Gogh, you know, even if I could look up into the night sky above Arles and see the starry, starry night, the stars exploding. I would not choose to be that anguished. But I do think that within all of us is a place, as Terry Tempest Williams is talking about, where we feel confused and muddled in a state of bewilderment and fear, and writing helps make sense of that. Dave is absolutely right that part of what we're trying to do is just get some perspective on who we are and what we've experienced. And some of that is simple preservation, because that work is not happening on the internet, and it doesn't happen. Art arises from concerted attention. It's an act of concerted attention. It is the antithesis of distraction, and I think that's really what's happening mostly, not entirely, but mostly on the internet. It's a culture that's very lonely and very afraid, trying to distract itself.
Terry Tempest Williams continues, "I write to begin a dialogue," and I'm wondering, Steve Almond, if you enter your writing experience thinking about the reader, thinking about the audience and the reaction you might get to the words that you put on the page.
Well, every writer struggles with that to some extent, because as David knows, you know, if the work's any good, you're letting some stuff out of the bag, even if it's in careful fictional disguise, right? You know, you could ask David, you know, so what were the reactions of friends of his or relatives of his to seeing this piece of writing? And it's complicated. So of course you do think about who might read it. But the main way that I think about the audience is that my Hippocratic oath of writing is never confuse the reader. Take good care of the reader. Make it clear what the emotional stakes of the story are and where we are and what we're dealing with. And part of the reason that I emphasize that is because I think in this era of screen addiction and kind of frantic distraction, writers, oftentimes young writers, are so they're competing with these frantic visual media. And so they just sort of try to immerse the reader immediately in all these intense sensual details and kind of throw everything but the kitchen sink at the reader. And the reader's oftentimes terribly confused by that and just disoriented. So my credo as a writer is, you know, my job is really to build a reliable psychological and emotional ramp to the moments that really matter, and then slow down as much as I can in the midst of those moments.
David, where does technique fit into all of this? You know, the nuts and bolts, the grammar, the sentence structure, the point of view. Where does all of that fit into the motivation?
Well, that's the toolbox. That's the craft. And the craft of writing is what Writers at Work is all about. We are teachers of craft, and we're an independent organization. We're all volunteers. And we just take it as our job that we are trying to teach craft on a very high level. I wanted to say one thing in response to your quote from Terry Tempest Williams, that I have never envisioned a piece of writing. I think about an incident that happened in my past, in my youth, and I think I need to write that up. And I sit down at the computer, and there's a blank page in front of me, and it has never happened that it comes out the way I had envisioned it. It is always different. There's something that creeps in there from the subconscious that directs things, and it's an odd, exhilarating, wonderful experience. But it's also frightening. You know, writers talk about the dread of the blank page, and that's it.
Mm. Yeah. Do you feel that dread, Steve Almond? How do you get over it?
You don't get over it. You manage it.
Nobody
does. And people will sometimes think, because, you know, if you're a published author, the trick to that whole thing, as David knows, is you've edited all your bad decisions, all your ambivalence, all your fear, all your evasions. Those have been edited out. That's why you're published. But every writer goes through their first draft and second and third and fourth draft. And I hate writing. I mean, it for me to have to bear down and concentrate and really just stare at the page and imagine my way into a character's life, or, you know, revisit something from my own life that's difficult and complicated, that's no fun. That's not my idea of a day at the park. But the alternative is I feel like that stuff lives inside me and sort of festers And, you know, so I sort of feel like I don't really have a choice in the matter. I can either be honest about this stuff in the one way that I know how to tell stories effectively. I'm not a good musician or a visual artist or anything else. This is what I have, what I've been given, the language. And that's how I have to go about trying to, you know, write about the stuff that matters to me. That's really all I do when people say, well, what should I be writing about? And I always say to them, well, what can't you get rid of by other means? What stays there? What lingers?
Yeah.
And that in the end is the stuff you wind up writing about. There's a funny quote from Kurt Vonnegut, who was a writer I, you know, worshipped and read when I was in high school and college and reread still. And somebody asked him at the end of his life, well, what's your essential topic, Kurt Vonnegut? This is just about 6 months before he died. And he looked at the audience and he said, I write again and again about my family. And this was a shocking answer, Jennifer, because if you've read Kurt Vonnegut, you would expect him to say something lofty, like, I write about the fate of the species, or I write about our morality and our moral failings, or the chaos of war. But really, what he was saying is, you write about, in whatever disguise, the people who you love and have tried to love and who you love, you know, feel the most deeply about, you're writing about them for the rest of your lives.
Hmm.
You know, and that's not easy stuff to do.
You are working with aspiring writers all the time. You give many, many workshops and, you know, influence hundreds of students. What are the common mistakes that you find people making in their writing consistently? I mean, are there patterns?
Yeah, there absolutely are. The first thing, as I mentioned, is that out of an insecurity about whether the story they have to tell is really worth telling, and also in some sense because they don't know the story they want to tell yet or they're not ready to face it, young writers, I don't mean young chronologically, but early in their career, tend to sort of just try to immerse the reader in scene immediately. And they're also told over and over again, well, you're a creative writer now, write in scene, show, don't tell.
Mm.
And that kind of dogma causes people to not really set up a narrator, the person who guides the reader into the story. If you read any of the literature from the 19th century or early 20th century, there's always this wonderful entity known as the narrator who guides the reader through and makes sure they're never confused. Sometimes the story will swoop into a more subjective mode, but we always have this we always have this narrator who's guiding us through the action. I think people tend to overwrite because they want the reader to feel emotion, and so they assert it rather than dramatizing it. I see that all the time. They write to set because they want to sound intelligent. I think most of the mistakes that writers make early in their career are the mistakes I made. They're mistakes that come from your insecurity about whether what you have to say is worth saying and whether the story you want to tell is worth telling.
David, are those the mistakes you see?
Oh, yes. Every writer has to go through this process. I had someone tell me that it takes 10 years to make a writer. I mean, you can get a medical degree in 7 years. But I think it's true that it's the people who are willing to stay with it and open their minds and take correction and take comment and even seek out criticism that will really get through to the point where they can produce publishable material.
Hmm.
And it doesn't even have to be publishable as long as they're satisfied and they can satisfy a reader.
Steve Elmond, our time is short, but do I dare ask you what advice you'd give to those aspiring novelists out there?
Well, it's the same thing David said, really. This is a marathon. It's not a sprint, you know? And the people who end up persisting as writers are the ones who are able to recognize that they need to get better and to look at the work of the people around them, usually at their same level, and compassionately explain when they're making good decisions as a writer and when they're making less good decisions, because that's how you learn to get better. It sounds counterintuitive, but in my workshops, I always emphasize you'll get better as a critic before you get better as a writer, because you have to develop this capacity, the critical faculty, which allows you to judge your decisions without giving in to the opera of self-doubt. That's just how it works, and that's the only way that people get better. It's not glamorous, but that's really how it works.
Mm. Steve Elmond, he is the author of 10 books, including Candy Freak and God Bless America, and his article, Why Therapy is on the Wane and Writing Workshops are on the Rise, was published in the May 23rd edition of the New York Times Magazine. He joined us from the studios of WGBH in Boston. And Steve Elmond, thanks so much for your time.
My pleasure. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Steve.
And David Tippetts, a board member of Writers at Work. And the Writers at Work conference, the 27th annual, will be held in Alta, Utah from June 6th to June 10th. And David, I understand there still are spots available there?
Yes, there are still spots available in Steve's workshop. A couple of them are full, but we still have a lot of places left.
Terrific. More details on the website, writersatwork.org, or of course go to kcpw.org for more information. And David, thanks very much for your time today.
Thank you.
Coming up, surveying the Salt Lake City Cemetery, but first a break. This is City Views on KCPW Salt Lake City.